All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 75 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people. With myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller. Myself, I am a ultra athlete and a sports scientist with a PhD focusing on metabolic flexibility. So I did mine in low carbohydrate sports performance, but I don't like to talk about that too much now. Now I just love all aspects of sports science. And Matthew over there, he is an expert and founder of mountain bike software and hardware, which is to analyze your braking. So there is some pretty major news coming out in the space of BrakeAce, Matt's company. So keep an eye on that. Matt also coaches, liaises, consults with mountain bikers, rad riders, professionals, grassroots, companies, everyone. He's just like the epitome of a mountain bike geek. A lad, Matt.
Sheesh. What an introduction, Will.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. We just love sports.
We do. And that is the Performance Advantage podcast is all about bringing sports science to the people. And today on episode 75, we're talking about like analyzing failure. Like we all fail. It's kind of inevitable. And let's just keep it to sports and races and competitions for today. But we want to use kind of what happened to me a couple weekends ago at the Tuttawera Ultra as a framework, some of Matt's personal experiences and his success and failure, and delve into kind of the sports science aspects of what you can look for when you're analyzing your own failures. All right, and just a reminder for all you loyal podcast listeners, Power 30 to get $30 off any of our courses, our online courses, the running power meter, the mountain bike power meter, the fundamentals of using sports science to train more effectively, 6-module course, all of them, they're available now. You can go and get it. $30 off with the code POWER30. All right, Matt, analyzing failure. What are some of your experiences with failure in sport?
Lots of experiences in failure. Pretty much not every time is a failure, but you fail a lot until you have a result that you're happy with.
Yeah. So if, I kind of compare the start of my, career, and then the, what just happened, right? So at the start.
Should we get into what happened? Okay. I think we should like talk about what, because we've been talking about failure between ourselves quite a bit because of your recent failure.
Yeah.
So can we talk about what happened and then how you felt?
Sure. So what happened? I had the Tuttawera Ultra 102-kilometer run, which is here locally in Rotorua, New Zealand. Part of the Ultra Trail World Series, pretty big event. And this year, it ended with me being carried out of the forest at 95 Ks. I had about 7 Ks to go. And it probably couldn't have ended much worse than what happened. So what happened was everything was going right. I knew I was in great shape. I'd done this 5K. Some of you may have heard me talk about it before. We have it locally every second Thursday over the summer. And I did a personal best by like 20 seconds. I ran 16:30 on like a pretty gnarly kind of slow course. And that was my 17th run on that course over 2 years. And so to go 20 seconds faster, that would have been like 10 days out from the race. I was like, I am on, I know I'm in good shape. And I knew my couple of my bigger runs. I remember saying to you, Matt, like, I'm in great shape.
I do remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was confident, although since my 24-hour failure, which we also did a podcast on. So that was November. I had, training had been a bit bits and pieces. I won't get into that too much now. We'll go through that. But I was confident I was ready to push the envelope. And without the big name internationals like we've normally had for this event, you know, due to COVID, I had a real opportunity to get on the podium, like just realistically. And so that was in my head, but I knew last year I'd done an amazing race. So I was in it. Get in. Matt, actually, this reminds me, get on the start line. I'm always a bit late to the start line because I don't like lining up 5 minutes before, just standing there. You know, I was doing some stretches and shot over to the start line, work my way to the front. And then they're like, all right, we've got 1 minute or something to go. It's cool. And then I just, you know, look down while trying to relax myself. Then I realize my running power meter had fallen off.
What?
Yep. And I thought immediately.
Where was
okay,
it?
Is it
Did
worth
you find it?
Is it worth not going
doing
to look
the
for
race
it?
At all without a power yeah. meter?
Is it worth like because, you know, in New Zealand dollars, like $400, right? I was like, shit, is it worth it? Should I just leave? What, like, will insurance cover it? I was thinking all these things, like, immediately. I looked at my mate who was standing next to me. It's like, shit, pointed down. And so I jumped the fence, like, of the corral, starting corral. I was like, where was I? I tied my shoelaces really tight over there, just this big paddock, just this big, like, reserve. So I run over, I look around. I can't see it. And I was like, yes, when I was doing my stretches, I was doing like the hip flexor stretch where you put your foot up behind you on it was like this bench thing. I was like, I must have knocked it off. Ran over there. Stay relaxed. Can I see it? I can't see it. Stay relaxed. Look. Boom. There it is. Yes. Run back right to the front on the outside of the corral, jump the fence. And then he's literally going 10, 9. And I'm like, just relax, Will. Clip it in. It's 100. It doesn't matter if your run starts. Clip it in. And I clipped it on, stood up, go.
Wow.
That's
great timing.
It was incredible that it all worked out. And so then we started and it was a complete contrast to last year. No, last year we just took off and I pulled right back. Whereas this year, everyone is kind of like, without the big names there, like the Tom Evans who I interviewed last year and Sage Candidate, like some of the world's best top of the field trail runners, there's no one like willing to take the field. And so we all kind of cruised off and it's just like everyone's looking at each other. And a couple of dudes went, this local guy, Michael Voss, he's like 220 marathon runner. This is his first 100K and he just starts moving and then it starts, right? And but from there, boom, we're away. And it was all good. Yeah, we had a good group of people. I was eyeing everyone up. You know, I could tell a few people were struggling a bit. And so get into it. And honestly, I was going really well for like 50Ks.
Yeah, so where did it start to fall apart? Because I went out to the lake and you had told me you would be there around this time. So I got there a little bit early. I figured, oh yeah, he might be going pretty good. I waited. And then I was like, where is this guy? So a couple runners went past. So I checked the live timing because you had a link to the live timing. I kept checking it. So I must have clicked that link like 100 times or something. Just wondering where you were. I was like, is he alive? Is he dead? And then like, there's some people I was like coming through. I was like, I don't know. Will's pretty quick. I'm really surprised that they're beating him. And then he came through and I got my camera out and took a video and you didn't look happy. So obviously something had happened. So where did it start to fall apart? Because it sounded like you felt pretty good. And then you came through going real slow.
Thanks.
And then I kept catching up with you and you were just going slower and slower. Just clearly not having fun. And then you had to stop. But I remember seeing you come down some steps and you like had to come down the steps sideways. And everyone else was like flat jumping down the steps pretty much.
Yeah, so it was around 60 kilometers, a bit over, actually, maybe 65. It's the most interesting thing because I was going really well and I knew I was in good shape. knew I was pushing a little bit, but I wanted to risk it, to get the biscuit. And I felt my body just shut down. I described the feeling as anyone who's done a major, especially running event, multi-sport event, and mountain biking. I'm not sure, I haven't done a lot of large events, but I'm guessing maybe like 100-mile mountain bike, where you have the biggest DOMS, like your legs are done. You're done, you know, and you have real bad muscle soreness, like going to the gym for the first time. And that happened at 65 kilometers. I had 35 plus to go. And I was like, okay, I don't know what's happening here. Obviously, I have a saying to myself, endure the lows, ride the highs. So like, this is a low, endure it, keep moving. Big race. I can lose a few minutes. I'm way ahead of where I thought I'd be by this stage. And I got slower and slower to the point where I was like, okay, I was struggling to run. Just I was in so much pain, like physical pain of, I guess, discomfort, maybe is a better word. Yeah. And that was 65 and I had to finish. The thing is like, yeah, I'm pretty quick. Like by that stage, I was maybe running an average of 5:40 minute per K. So I knew, and then I was like struggling to hold like 8 minutes, but I was still going to do a reasonable time, knowing that, you know, there's some faster kind of sections. So then it was just a mental challenge. And so from there, I didn't know what had gone on. I wasn't analyzing it, but pretty much what happened, I went so deep mentally to finish, to run these next like 37 kilometers that I completely disregarded my like nutrition and hydration and anything. And I got worse and worse to the point that I was, yeah, I like collapsed and then thought I'd just like have a bit of a kip on the side of the trail. And then the weirdest feeling, I don't know if you've had this in your 24 hour events, Matt, but like you just know in your mind is telling you, mind, like something is seriously wrong. You are not in a good way. It's like real horrible sickness or food poisoning. When you just know the whole system from the muscles to the neurons, to like this, your stomach is just all not working. And so I told this runner who came past, I was like, look, mate, can you go tell someone I'm not okay and I'm just up here? Like 800 meters from the finishing line, but like, oh, not the finishing line, sorry, the aid station, but like in the middle of these big steps, like the section between these two big steps, which I just made it through, but it's so excruciating. I had to grab a stick to try and help me down because my legs were like literally crumbling. I was in so much pain and my muscles were just like non-functioning. And then they came up and they tried to pick me up, the medic and my friend Harrison, who was going to pace me the last bit. They picked me up and then like all the blood, like, just at that point, I honestly thought I was going to die. Like I was insane. And they lay me down and I uncontrollably started projectile vomiting about 2 liters of water, which was probably the only water I drank for the last few hours. So I hadn't been absorbing that. And I was yelling at them. I was like, I'm not okay, man. Just get me out of here. Like, get me out of here. And they literally had a helicopter come in to check if they could lift me out because I couldn't walk. Every single muscle in my body was cramping. Harrison was like, oh my God, what's going on? And the medic, I could hear in his voice, like, he's like, gets on the phone. He's like, yeah, he's really struggling. And you know, they try and walk off and like turn away from you. Like, I can hear you. Like I can hear the fear in your voice. And oh man, I was so scared. And then after time passed, you know, I was able to, he gave me a couple of tablets, like electrolyte tablets and stuff. And I started to cool down and get, and the other thing was pretty hot. And so anyway, that was, they had to carry me out. I literally couldn't stand up or do anything. And I lay on a stretcher for a few hours before they allowed me to go home. And that was the end of my race.
So how the heck do you analyze that?
Like, yeah.
What went wrong?
What went wrong? Well, this is part of what we want this podcast to be about is like, I looked at it and I was like, I went too hard. That was it. You know, I was running, I wanted to be under 160 heart rate. So last year, same race, probably hotter conditions, I'd say, I averaged 161 for the entire 100. And I had periods of 160 to 165. And so at the start, I was, yeah, I'd like pull back and walk a little bit on any real steep hill just to make sure I wasn't going above. Then, yeah, so in the main Eastern Okatine, like the main hard trail section where I lost like a lot of time last year, I wanted to make sure I had time. And I was just killing it. I was absolutely smashing it. I felt so strong. But then my heart rate was definitely like sitting at 165.
Do you do then when you see your heart rate at 165? What did you, because that was a mistake.
Right. Yep. That's a mistake.
So what kind of conversation did you have with yourself to say that that was okay?
How am I feeling? Okay. I'm feeling really good. Like I'm really strong. How can I contain, can I maintain this? This, you know, is this possible for another 60 Ks? Oh, it's only just these little ups, and then I'm getting the recovery on the downs, and I want to see if I can do this. Right. So, you know, if I think back about that and compare it to last year, where I just went, this isn't going to allow me to run my best race. I'm slowing down, and I walked a lot more. And I, like I said, I lost a lot of time, but did I actually? Because I finished and I was still like 14th, and had some of the fastest back sections. But anyway, I knew I wanted to push the envelope and see what was possible. And, you know, when you're at the pointy end of the field, how do you find out how long you can maintain a certain effort for without ever doing it? So. Yeah, the conversation was because I had put in, again, in the back of my head, like I could do really well here. I could get a good time, a respectable time for a place that I could potentially get. I think I was in about eighth place at that point. And I knew that some of the guys ahead who had raced before would struggle. And so, yeah, it was kind of that torn between I want to do really outcome and present moment.
So you weren't really focused on what you knew you had to do.
Like I wanted to find out my limit. Like if it was possible, just go that little, like it's only, you know, it was only a little bit harder, but it was also continuously a little bit harder. And as well as that, I was running with someone. Us, you know, so, and there's three of us that were kind of toing and froing. So that adds, it's so exciting to be in a race, like race scenario within the event, something I'd never like mentally planned for or accounted for to be in the situation I had at the start, and I let a lot of people go and I pulled them back, you know, and I was comfortable with the start being a point in which I had to focus, but I put like a lot of emphasis on this one section that, I started to get very, probably similar to the 24 hour where I got very attached to, wow, I'm going a lot faster than I was expecting to go through here. This is going to lead to an even better time than I was anticipating. And yes, my heart rate's a bit high and I'm feeling like I'm working a bit, but not too bad, fooling myself. But if I slow down, then I'm going to slow down. Why not keep going? All right. So that's, if we use that as number one.
That's what went wrong.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but I know I've done that before. Matt, you've done that before. We've all fooled ourselves into going too hard, either at the start or at some point of the race. What generally happens is you slow down, right? Like you're like, oh, damn, I'm going to have to take a bit longer at this aid station. I'm going to have to just sit this one out. I'm going to have to walk it out. I'm just going to have to freewheel. I'm going to have to recoup. And then you get back into it. Right. But I like fell off a cliff and I wasn't going at 170, 180, like anaerobic threshold. I was only going a little bit harder. And 60 Ks for me, I can bang that out. You know, and 60 Ks at like a, I have to have check my heart rate. I think about one, still only just over 160 for that part, for that whole first 60 kilometers. So again, not outrageous, not something I can't withstand. So I knew that wasn't it. So now we think, well, cause that, you know, the cause and effect are kind of don't correlate. So what else?
I don't know. What could it be?
Well, then I ran out of water.
Okay. So you stopped drinking.
So this was, it was hot conditions. Now this is another mistake or forethought on my behalf in that I wanted to be as light as possible. Right. And carrying extra water is heavy.
No, don't tell me you carried less water just because you wanted to carry less water.
Not necessarily less water. I went off of what I drank last year. And anyway, there wasn't enough. And so rather than taking more to be on the safe side, I guess I took the like minimum of what
I've seen this one before. Yeah.
That's so
tricky. Okay, so you didn't have enough water.
Yes, I ran out of water and I was running a bit hard. And this part was between the like 50, 60K section. So at the point I really needed it.
Yeah. Okay.
So now something's happening there where, yep, electrolyte imbalances, obviously hydration, maybe nutrition absorption. So that was dumb.
Yeah, that's
retrospectively.
Pretty dumb.
Yeah. But I had previous data to back up what I'd know. But yeah.
Okay. Was it just those two things or was there something else?
That was within the race.
Okay.
That was the only two I could really bring up within the race that, and then when I spoke to, Tom Reynolds, who's the sports doctor, he's like an adventure racer and a guy I know from around the scene, a lot of experience in this kind of stuff. We have to get him on actually. He's like, you know, what happened to you, the feeling you had within your muscles, particularly, does very much sound like an electrolyte imbalance. And as much as I am not a fan of, electrolytes in terms of having them in every single fluid you consume. It was more of a hydration based, removal of, you know, most probably, the calcium reuptake and release within the muscle cell, which, functions for contractile activity. So whatever that happened, but also going into it. Now, if we take like a step back and lead into the race, you know, Matt, you and I, we're trying to further, ourselves and continue to improve through the way that we want to educate and inspire and bring sports science to the people. So we're doing this course to help improve the way we can convey messages and teach. And that just happened to be a 3-day intensive course, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, leading into the race. So that was pretty intense. And you and I both got pretty hard on the work we did before the 2 days in the week before that to account for the fact that so that week was full on. Not only that, like obviously I coach, you know, we have this podcast, we have the course, I'm a dad, still had my training to do. So there's a lot that went on that week and way, way too much to lead into what was going to be, you know, a 9 to 10 hour full on physical mental effort.
So yeah, so under recovery, right?
Yeah.
We can jot that down.
Under recovery. Mm-hmm. And then if we step back outside of, you know, further back, I did the 24 hour, got like heat stroke, pulled out. Then had kind of 2 weeks off, and then had like another week before doing a 60K mountain ultra, which went all right. Didn't go amazingly, understandably, but it went all right. And then I had another 2 weeks off. So that was December 5th through to pretty much Christmas. And then from Christmas through to the race, I had about 6 weeks. And within that, I still hadn't entered the race because I wasn't sure if I'd be ready. And I was like, I'll do a mini training camp. You know, well, things are a bit quiet over Christmas, New Year. And oh man, I was in such good shape. I was just absorbing training, putting out amazing efforts. And I knew 2 weeks is kind of my limit for a real intense session. And through that, I was like, yeah, I'm in. I'm doing this. I'm for sure. I did this 50K run that just felt like nothing. And knew I had to, from the end of that 2 week block, I knew I had 3 weeks and I had just had to pull back. Within that, I was also doing the 3000 meter track race. And I put that in to ensure that, you know, that was 2 weeks before I would not overdo the training aspect of things. Cause I knew if I was tired, I wouldn't be able to run a fast 3000. So I do that often to ensure that I do that with like 10K or 5K to make sure leading into an event, I'm still focusing on my speed and still making sure that I recover. Otherwise I won't be able to perform. So anyway, that was. Like in hindsight, ultra marathons, like you can't underprepare. Or I got so, I guess, cocky about the amount of 100Ks I'd done, and all of them had gone well to a point. None of them had gone horribly. Yeah, like all of them. I think besides the Tararua last year, where I was 14th. I was, I think, yeah, top 10 every single one. And then on the podium of couple one, like, even the 85K, and like I was always nailed it, you know. Some little things could have gone better, but pretty much overall good. So I got cocky that I was, yeah, I can run 100K. I did all this build up, I did all this fitness, but actually, if you want to do what I did, like in terms of you want your best optimal performance, you can't expect to half-ass your training with these other kind of races, come in for 2 weeks, be in the best physical, you know, state that you've been in for a really long time, but not having actually given yourself an appropriate build up for the event. And so then trying to correlate that into, you know, maintaining a slightly higher effort, having a very busy week the week before, running out of water, that leaves me at 65K to be falling off a massive cliff physically. And then trying to keep going to finish while like ignoring all of, you know, these like physical and like taking care of myself led me into this like absolute state.
Yeah. I knew you were in a bad place.
When I told you to go away.
Yeah. You told me to go away. So, and I want to kind of get into like how this made you feel, but it was maybe like more than halfway through where I saw you and I was just riding with you because I knew you were hurting and you were going slow. So I just kind of rode behind you and was talking to you. I took a photo of you and you did not look good. You actually stopped so I could take a photo of you and you gave me thumbs up. And then you asked me to leave. Okay, this is not going well. I'm just wondering. So obviously after that, I left and then things got even worse. I'm just wondering though, you know, cause I know you put a lot of pressure on yourself, to do well in these events, and a lot of what you do in your athletic life is you use that to define kind of who you are. And then you go into these big events and it doesn't go the way you envisioned it all this time. So how does that make you feel as like an athlete and a coach? And I think a lot of people will be able to identify with us.
Yeah, it's a very deep question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I guess, embarrassment from a like, yeah, coach and athlete perspective, more of like who I want to be as a person. We have this podcast. I have YouTube channel. I have like my website and blog and Instagram where I love to put out information as, I don't want to say a point of authority, but like, you know, I have a PhD and I want to help people perform. And so then it's like, you can't even take care of yourself. Look at all these dumb mistakes you made. Like, how can you not? You should be executing every single race. Coincidentally, every single athlete I helped executed their race very well because a lot of them ran past me. Funny story, actually, this one guy, Ian, if you're listening, shout out, he runs past. He's like, it was not long before I like collapsed. He's like, oh, Will, how was your race? Like, he's still in the race. And I was like, I'm in it. And he's like, oh.
He thought you had like finished and doing a cool down or something.
Yeah, I was like, what was he thinking I was doing in my singlet hydration pack race number, like 10 Ks back in the course? And he was 90 Ks deep as well. So he wasn't thinking straight. He's like, hey, Will, how was your race? I was like, I'm in it. But anyway, I later chilled out with him in the medical tent.
All right.
But so how did it make me feel? Yeah, just so, man, like real upset that I knew I was in the best shape of my life and I wasn't able to like execute the race that I wanted because of silly mistakes. And also Kepler didn't go well. The 24 hour I pulled out and it was like, this I didn't finish. So two of the three races I had done for my, what I'd consider my sport and something I want to perform at. It's like, is shit, man. That doesn't feel good. And then you start questioning, like, am I good enough? Like, was I even expecting too much? And, you know, you start questioning your own abilities in that sort of small window of time. Probably not as much during, like, I was in so much discomfort that, you know, when I told you to go away, that was just after the Blue Lake. So I think we had about 15, 17 Ks to go. And it was just like this real battle between, you know, that internal dark place where you just, you don't want anyone else there. It's just like you versus you. Like, this is now some stupid competition to prove that this all hasn't been a waste of time because you can still finish and whatever that means. Because the state I put myself in was like, it was not healthy. It wasn't like productive. It didn't, you know, do anything for me. I know I can push really hard. Like, I know that's one of my strengths and mentally I can do that. But, So there's like, I was ignoring every single sign that I was not healthy. And it was no longer like about just, oh yeah, well, you've ruined your race. Like, not ruined, you know, you've gone too hard and you just got to jog it in kind of thing.
So do you just, the only reason you kept going is because you didn't want to look like a quitter?
Yeah. And I didn't want to feel like one either.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a lot of time for things to simmer in those long events. You know, like, it's like tossing these things around in your head because you're still not going so hard that you can't think. You're just thinking about everything. You can think usually like reasonably clearly. You just get a little skewed sometimes. But yeah, it is tough. But like, what do you do from here? And one of the things that I always find just, I guess it gives me a little bit of a chuckle as I see, you know, on Instagram or whatever, you see the pros talk about their races. And to us, we think like how amazing they are and how fit they are. And, you know, you got 20th in the World Cup race and that's great. That's awesome. But there will always be something when they write a caption on Instagram about, I learned so much from this event. So it didn't get the result I wanted, but I learned so much. Like, your racing's pretty straightforward. Like, you do all this training, you get really fit, right? And this is the way that I try and break it down with my athletes. And especially when it comes to race execution, like, you want to get to the race and not really have that much to learn. Like, there's always something that you'll pick up, but race isn't the time to like learn something new. A race is the time to execute the things you already know how to do. So you start within your ability, you pass when you need to, you ride smooth, you push really hard. You know, it's actually pretty basic if you kind of lay it out like, this is what you need to do. This, then this, then this, and you know that. So how much really is there to learn at every event when you've done so many races? So that I'm thinking about the people on Instagram when I see this, like, this is your job. Like, how much is there to learn when it's a step by, like, these clear steps that you need to execute?
Yeah. On paper.
It's hard. And, you know, one of the things is pacing, right? If you go slightly over your limit, doesn't matter what your limit is or, kind of when you hit it, you're going to pay for it. So if you go slightly too hard, everything else is going to be much more difficult and you'll probably go slower. So dial in your pacing. And then that's one less thing that you need to think about.
Yeah. With an ultra events, that can be a really hard thing to do because it's like, as an example, I coached a lady who came third and, actually Ruth Croft won overall. So she's a professional, ultra runner from New Zealand. And, can't really comment on her pacing, cause I haven't talked to her about her race. I was running with her at the start and she clearly beat me and everyone else. But, so I coached a lady and she ran, I can't remember if she was faster from the Blue Lake or equally, as Ruth, right? The winner, but she was about an hour and a half. Not a bit faster than that. Slower than her, which obviously the previous, 80 kilometers, she lost that time, but was able to run as fast as the winner of the whole entire race for the last 20K. So that's not potentially not good pacing. Like, it's amazing pacing, but there was clearly a capacity for her to go faster at some previous point. And now the heart rate restrictions we implemented, or the zones, the pacing strategy we put was off of all the data we had from previous. So she was third at the 100 mile last year. So we had 100 mile. We had, Kepler, I think she was fourth, like one of the top performers in New Zealand. And so, you know, we had 5.5 hours, 4 hours for a 50K. We had, 22 hours for 100, but we didn't have 100K. So you're like, I could implement what we knew, okay, that I could guarantee would allow her to perform optimally. But then analyzing the race, how can we figure out how much harder she can go to allow it, like, to not be in the position, that she can run as fast as the winner, because, like, that's too fast to be able to run. You want to be still tired enough that. So, Matt, how can we find that point without doing the race and then being in a position where you're like me, right? Where you go, okay, this is going to be, last year was 161 and it ended amazingly. I ran some of the fastest splits over the end and was so strong. Now I'm tried to go like a 163 and I've fallen off the cliff. That's not good enough. That's how I've learned. I need to, that 160 limit is pretty much my limit, right? I know that now. I learned that in the 24 hour when I, although I was running slow, it was too hot conditions, blah, blah, blah. And then I know that from this race and I know from previous races, I've performed well just under 160. So that's clearly my differentiating point, which I have learned from the race. Go.
Well, I keep thinking, why are we not talking about power?
What do you mean? Like,
why are we talking beats per minute? Why aren't we talking about how much power you can maintain?
Well, that has, I don't want to say not a lot of correlation, but
I guess because you get so fatigued in the 100K.
Yeah. And the,
is this why?
The trail is so hard to determine what your power really is, because you know, if it's super steep, right, you just have to walk. Just because of the, you know, there's parts within Eastern Okhotine where you're like kind of climbing. There's one section where you're like climbing, so your power is going to be super, super low. And then you do the, like, these real sharp, you know, like hairpins on a little windy up. And you're going so slow around those that, and your cadence is so high, like, you're not actually doing a lot. Then the next part, you are working back at a normal, appropriate level. But overall, yeah, your power and even normalized power is like quite low, but your heart rate's still 160 something. So that's, and then, yeah, it was hot and humid, so my heart rate's high again. So if I was just going off of power, it's like, no way that, and then even in the, so at 60 Ks, we have the aid station. We have this big climb, a few hundred meters, just straight up, quite steep. Now, I was stuffed by that stage, and I knew that. So I just was looking at my heart rate. It's like, I need to calm this myself down. This is just before I fell off the cliff. And that worked really well, because I just was like, yep, this is my... Whereas if I was looking at power, I would have kept thrashing myself. So, yeah, and the same...
I guess this is one of the things that we talked about in the course, where you need to kind of look at power and heart rate together.
Yeah, so, and like,
maybe
with,
we won't get into that one too much, but yeah. Like, I really, yeah, I don't know. I would love to kind of go back and look at your power along with your heart rate in this event and kind of break that down. But I think there always needs to be some sort of a takeaway from an event, because unless we, even if we win, like, there's always a takeaway. So, like, I guess it's a bit tongue in cheek to say, I learned so much, but you do need to learn something. Because otherwise if we stopped learning, then we'd just be the world champion, the very, very best, right? Cause we've got it totally dialed. There's always like something to learn. And then what you would need to do is you need to implement something in your preparation or in your execution to make sure that you don't make the same mistake again. Right. And this goes for whatever kind of a failure you have.
Well, actually, because that does go to the preparation. Yeah, I said I had this 2-week block mainly, and everything went amazing. Whereas last year, a group of us who were preparing for the race, both the miler and the 100K, because it's local, right? So, and I work with a bunch of locals. So we went out and did this big run. It was like 60, 65 kilometers. It was hot. And we were starting on from that hardest part of the course back into town. And we all suffered, and we all like blew up, and we just were like, stuff this race, stuff this training, like this stuff, that Western Okhotina section, it's horrible. And that was amazing, because I like pushed just a little bit hard, just because it was shorter and I was having fun and it was all good, and I, you know, and I suffered, and I thought, I can't do that in the race. Like, yeah. If I end up like this after 60 Ks, it'll be over. I'm only just remembering this now, actually, but you know, and that's why you have these really big blocks. And for me, I put in these kind of, these sessions where it might be 50 Ks slightly hard, right? Slightly above on this really similar terrain or section. So if that athlete is all good, you know, heart rate stays low that whole entire time at that output, Matt, like that power output or something, then we're good. We know. But then if they're falling off, if they're, you know, declining while heart rate's increasing, we're not sustainable. So I did that for a lot of athletes I work with, in terms of, we did these like 30K, like hard kind of run, just, you know, like a kind of a marathon pace, a sub threshold, to see how heart rate maintained. And if whoever had, like, if they had a big discrepancy in heart rate and pace, like pace started to drop or heart rate inclined or pace stayed the same and heart rate went really, really high, I knew that's not steady state. And that's a no-go zone. If any point you're not steady state for a 3-hour steady training run, then there's no way you can implement that into, you know, a 10 and 11, 12 hour run. At any point you step outside of steady state, you're potentially undoing the back quarter of your race. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. You know, if I think back to all the failures I had, because I was racing a lot, we did a lot of races.
Thing, like, if with these ultra, I do like a couple a year, right? And like, I said, they'd all gone well, but then if you get to do a race every weekend, or, you know, like you were racing a lot Saturday, Sunday,
but still making a lot of mistakes, because there was no, we just kind of weren't looking at it the right way, I guess, coming out of it. Like, with that, I didn't have the right mindset to come out of every event and learn, okay, what did I do wrong? But then when I started to figure out, okay, what did I do wrong? I focused on doing everything right. And mostly for me, that would be down to like pacing. So,
yeah. So, and you're right. Like, it is super simple.
Yeah.
Get kind of your, all your physical checks and balances dialed. Right, whatever that's, I'm talking about ultras, so it is, I use heart rate a lot because it's the kind of best indicated based on conditions and overall duration. But as we get shorter, you've got pace and power, and, or speed, you know, and so you need all that. Like, look, you've never done this output, and yeah, you can plus or minus a couple of percent because it could be your day and you're feeling amazing. But generally, you know what you can do. And then on alongside that, you need that mental, right? Because if Matt, you're there, and I just really despise you, and the last thing I want to do is get beaten by you, especially if it's like a selection race or, you know, it's highly publicized. In my head, I'm going to be thinking, forget everything. I need a win, you know? So you need to have that alongside it, and if you have those two dialed, you just go off and do it. Right? And I was in that way for a long period of time, but then at some point you need a really harsh reminder that you can't deviate away from those kind of things.
Yeah, you need to just execute. Like, that's all kind of a race is your chance to execute what you know to do. The harder thing, though, so it's easy to analyze a race. This is cool because you can go back and you can look at all your data. You can look at your splits. You can look at how everyone else did. And you can figure out what went wrong with your execution there. But it's really hard to understand what went wrong in the week before, for example, when you're just totally mentally exhausted. And we talked with Kevin Van Heuvels about his Olympic preparation for mountain bike. He was saying how when he finally was able to quit his job and he was a full-time professional Olympic mountain biker, that he didn't really change his training. He just changed how he recovered. He spent just way more time recovering. And he was only training like 15 hours a week. He was spending a lot of time recovering. And if, you know, maybe your training was similar, but if you suddenly are training the same and you have less recovery, well, first off, how do we quantify that difference? You know, we are starting to get technology like Whoop and the Oura Ring to start to quantify like how we sleep and all those things. And it's not totally well understood, but how do you quantify mental fatigue the day before an event? That's really hard. And what we need to do, we know we need to avoid it, but sometimes you just can't because, well, life happens.
Yeah.
So I guess the prudent racer would be like, I'm not going to do that the day before my event. I don't care. I don't care what anyone says. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to lock myself in a closet and I'm just going to totally chill out. But how do you then say, well, I know if I do that, it's going to make a difference here? And how do you know it even makes a difference at all in the negative? We can speculate that it probably does, because we know how important recovery is.
Well, there's experience. Like, I know I have a race week strategy that I generally, like a template that I've over the last decade been able to figure out from, like, you know, starting the week or week prior, low carb, going into carb, like from what I eat the night before, getting prepared, like knowing just kind of everything, right? Because you learn these things, you'll have this really easy week where you've gone away for an event or whatever. You're like, man, that was nice. And then you've had the event where you've been so ill prepared, like, oh man, I need new tires. Like, oh, I need to get my bike serviced. Like, oh, I didn't even, when's registration? Oh man, I'm going to get this one race I did, another city, and I had to go after something and registration was closed. And I was like, oh my, and you know, you've just through experience and then that whole mental stress. And so I'm going to go down the day before, right? 2 days out. And then I'm going to get my massage 5 days out, not 2 days out, because I was still pretty sore from it. You know, so you learn all of these things. But the most important one that I was saying to all the athletes I work with is, like, have you got time off work? Can you get time off work? Because that's going to make a massive difference to doing nothing, right? Yeah. So hard to quantify, but you know less is more.
Yeah, it's also the biggest difference, though, with recovery comes, like, longitudinally, like over a long period of time. Chronic recovery, right? We need maximum recovery all the time to make a really big difference. But yeah, you do want to do a little bit less leading into your event and not be so worked up. You want to go into it with a good state of mind. So how that affects you physically, watch this space.
Yeah, that's a super hard one, man. I'm sure you've had an event where you've been strung out, like, for whatever reason, you know, you got a flat tire in your van on the way to the race, and then just had a killer, just absolutely smashed it. And that happens too. So, it can be super hard to know. Like, some people love to keep themselves busy the few days before or whatever, but, yeah, I think what's important and what I want to have people take away is, like, if I go through my race, it's just not a matter of saying I wasn't fit enough or it just wasn't my day. You know, a lot of people say it just wasn't my day. And Matt, you're not, like, we're in the business of measuring this stuff and analyzing it. And then even looking at, and that's why looking at my data is, you can draw some stuff out, but not some stuff that was going to have me stretch it off the course.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and yeah, just such a bad state. But then, yeah, you can look at the training and then you leading up to it. And that's kind of, if you're only looking at data, that's kind of all you have, right? Is the race data and the training data. And then you've got to go, yeah, what happened in the race? And then what happened in the training and lead up? And those things should be able to explain what happened in your race if you're not super, like, stoked about your performance.
Yeah, the excuse, it wasn't my day, I don't really like that one because, well, why wasn't it your day? You know, you can't just, like, blame it on random reasons. There's always something.
If we go back to, like, your... It should be super simple, right? In race execution. Sometimes you have heavy legs, right? And it isn't your day. We can look back on why that is. And yeah, with a younger athlete I'm working with, he was racing all these different distances from, like, an 800 meter to run an 800 meter up to a 10K. And they were doing these sessions. Every single time, it's like, how was it? how'd you feel? You know, crap. Okay. What do we do 3 days before that? Okay, cool. Make a note. You know, to try and figure out this template of like 3 days out, hard session, minimum hard session. Okay. Easy session. And then, but you just require this big experience. But yeah, sometimes, Matt, you can't just put your template out and go, okay, well, I'm 20 watts below where I need to be. And if you don't have that mental strategy alongside that, you're out of the game. Oh, yeah. Shit, I'm not good enough. Everyone's riding away from me. I'm going to come last. Everyone's going to laugh at me. What's my Instagram caption going to be? Not my day. Heavy legs. Like, you know, how am I going to explain this to all my fans? How am I going to explain this to like the throngs of people you think are judging you and watching you? Because you're not going to be on and the gold medalist every single time.
No, it's true. And there, I think a lot of times you can find some reason to explain why. And I think, you know, maybe this is a good way to close this one out. Like, not every day is going to be great. Sometimes you can figure out why. Sometimes it's a little harder to figure out why. But in the end, it doesn't change who you are. And really, no one really cares. And I think this is one of the things that I dialed in when I was racing. No one cares how I do in this race, or the next race. They still see me as who I am. They see me as pretty good. And, you know, like it kind of doesn't matter how this next race goes. No, it's not going to really change how someone sees me, and they're probably going to forget.
They care for you.
Yeah. Right. So like, what's the saying that if they care, it doesn't matter, if they matter, it doesn't care. Whatever that one is, you know, if they matter, they don't care. If they care, they don't matter. That's the one. So
if they care, they don't matter. That's not it.
Yeah. Yep. No. So if someone really cares if you do bad, they really aren't your friend.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's not it.
The saying's close to that. So maybe someone can get back to us with what the saying is. But it's something like that. So, it really doesn't matter. So I don't think, I don't care that you had a bad event.
No, no one does. Awesome, like funny. Most people are just like, oh, when are you going to do the podcast on your race? Because of that's who we are, right? That's how it all goes. But it's the people we have listening, it's personally, right? They want to have that kind of a justification of what happened, you know, for them. Outwardly, no one cares. Especially,
but that should help relieve the pressure is kind of what I'm saying. That takes the pressure off because it doesn't matter what anyone thinks anyway. Like who cares?
Yeah. And
that's your event. Don't worry. Like, I really never care what people think how I do an event. Mostly because now I don't really care how I do it in an event, but, you know, I just try and hit the execution and, you know, however that goes, it goes, but no one cares. So that should help smooth things out. You learn what you can and then you hit the next one and execute properly.
That's right. Great advice, Matthew. Thank you. That's awesome.
So we'll look forward to hearing how you did next year and you're going to execute properly.
Oh man, I'm like, next year there is no stone left unturned. I'm going to be so prepared. I'm absolutely going to smash it. So watch this space, February 2022. Jeez. Wow. It's kicking on. Man, we're not getting any younger. We'll be up to episode 76 by then. All right, everyone.
Awesome.
All the best with your training. Catch you next time.